Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the December 15th Board of Directors meeting of the Eastern Municipal Water District. I will call this meeting to order. We always start our meetings off with our Pledge of Allegiance, and I'm going to ask a very important person of the Eastern team to lead us this morning. One of the projects that we got completed in 2021 was our new billing system. Without Charles back there, that would not have happened. So, Charles, would you take the would you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance this morning?
Please stand, raise the flag. Join the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Charles, and again, congratulations on leading us into the billing system that we will have for the next 20 years. So thank you for that. May I get the board secretary to please call the roll.
Director Slauson?
Present.
Director Armstrong?
Here.
Director Beckard?
Here.
And I understand that Director Crona will be absent from today's meeting.
That's correct.
Very good. So we do have a quorum. With that, I will, would you like to read our, for folks that may call in this morning, if we have that, just our rules for calling in?
Absolutely. The guidelines for virtual participation in EMWD board meetings is as follows. To avoid creating acoustic feedback, please mute your device during the meeting unless you are speaking. Before speaking, please unmute your device and turn down the volume of any other devices that are near you and tuned into the meeting. When done speaking, please mute your device again. Please participate from a quiet environment so that the board can hear you when you are speaking.
Thank you so much. April, do we have anyone wishing to do general public comment on any item not on the agenda this morning?
Not that I'm aware of.
Very good. Thank you. We will now go to item two on our agenda, which is our public hearing calendar this morning. We have two public hearings. The first one is a public hearing to adopt proposed resolution authorized project for the installation of a battery energy storage system and service agreements in the amount of $4.5 million, which total includes contracts with Tesla Incorporated in the amount of $3,284,000. Dan, good morning.
Good morning, President Pauly. Thank you. So we're very excited today to bring these.
I actually have to open the public hearing, so give me.
President Pauly? First item will be a presentation, and then we'll move into the public hearing part
good.
Of the
agenda. Okay, thank you on that. Okay.
So, yes, we're very excited to present today recommendations to pursue a battery energy storage system. You know, as you know, the district has pursued a energy management strategy of flexibility for many, many years. We have fuel cell operations, microturbines, now 21 megawatts of solar power generation. And really the next phase of that flexibility portfolio is battery energy storage systems. This technology has evolved considerably in the recent years, and similar to what occurred with solar initiative, the incentive fundings that are now being made available for battery storage systems are quite significant, and as Sam will present here in a moment, cover the vast majority of this particular project. So I would like to share that the order of events in this particular item is we will begin with a presentation. Our energy manager, Sam Robinson, will provide that to you. And then we will conduct that public hearing to consider a proposed resolution for compliance with Government Code 4217. Should the board adopt that recommended resolution, we will move to an action item for the authorization of the project and the various contracts that go with it. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to Sam Robinson, our energy manager, who will provide a presentation.
Very good. Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Robinson.
Good morning, members of the board. Thank you very much for your time today. Before I start, I'd like to introduce Jen Petherick. She's with Terra Verde Energy, has been working with us side by side on this, and Dylan Albanese, who's a senior project manager with Tesla, who may be working on us during the installation of the batteries at our facilities. So if we could start the first slide, or do I do it?
The control.
Oh, I messed that up already, didn't I? Okay, I'm not really that good with the is. Oh, there we go. My apologies. Okay. So similar to the solar initiatives the district took on, there is a self-generation incentive program funding opportunities available for batteries as well. And depending on the size of the battery and the use of the battery, as much as 85 cents a watt hour down to 35 cents a watt hour. In this case, the district was able to secure funding at both the 85 cent a watt hour as well as the group four 35 cent a watt hour with the additional 15 cent resiliency adder, bringing that to 50 cents a watt hour. So quite some time ago, to kick it off, Terra Verde did conduct a feasibility assessment against 259 of our Southern California Edison electrical accounts, in that identifying which accounts would benefit from battery installation. Following that, two RFPs were performed, one under the equity program, the 85 cents a watt hour, and the second under the base large scale with that resiliency adder for the total 50 cent a watt hour. And in both of those, Tesla was selected, both for their quantitative and qualitative rankings. And then just a quick note, it was back in March when the board approved reimbursement to Tesla for those self-generation incentive program application fees for those battery projects. So I scroll to the next one. There we go. As mentioned before, we were able to secure funding under both the equity program and the large-scale storage program. Couple quick notes on the equity. The funding is pretty much provides for a zero capital cost battery, including 10 years of O&M. Tesla will receive those SGIP payments over the next 5 years of performance for those batteries. And at completion of construction, the district will own those batteries. Under the large scale program, the district, if approved, will front the money for the installation of those and the 10 years O&M, but will be reimbursed 70 to 75% of those project costs over the next 5 years of performance out of those batteries. And again, the district will own the batteries at construction completion. Quick economic summary for the SGIP equity, self-generation incentive program equity sites, or SGIP. Hemet Water Filtration will get two batteries, again, zero capital cost, zero 10-year O&M cost. Tesla will receive the SGIP incentive for those projects. Sanderson Lift Station, zero capital, zero O&M. Tesla, again, will receive the self-generation incentive program funding for that. Some small out-of-pocket costs for the districts, slightly over $300,000, of which Tesla will reimburse the district $184,000 at construction completion, and all in with a net present value over 15 years of slightly more than $1 million. For the large-scale sites, the district will front the money for that, slightly more than $3 million for the battery installation, roughly $250,000 for the 10 years of O&M on that. A couple other project costs of slightly more than $400,000. The total expected self-generation incentive program incentive for that is slightly more than $2.5 million, leaving roughly $1.2 million of out-of-pocket other project costs for the district, but with a 15-year net present value savings of $1.8 million for that. So just to quick summary of the provisions and a quick look at the project schedule. So again, the O&M costs are covered under the equity sites. O&M project costs for the large scale, although paid by the district, reimbursed with the SGIP self-generation incentive program funding over the 5 years. Tesla will reimburse the SGIP application fees that the board had approved back in March to the district at construction completion. And if for any reason due to Tesla's delay, any of the SGIP incentive program funds are lost, the Tesla will reimburse the district for those expenses to date. Project schedule, so looks like first quarter project design, notice to proceed, construction roughly summer of next year, construction completion fall of next year, with expected permission to operate closer to the end of next year, and then following a month of performance, savings confirmation for that. And the final slide, recommendation. So to approve and authorize a project for the installation of battery energy storage systems for $4,500,000. Included in that is a contract with Tesla for $3,284,461. Some expected SCE costs of roughly $120,000. A contract with Terra Verde Energy for $148,125. And some administrative award contracts and agreements with various consultants for the balance of that amount. And with that, are there any questions?
I don't have any questions. It looks great to me.
I had one, and I don't know if you can answer this or not. What will this do in relation to our good friends at the South Coast Air Quality Management District? I mean, does this give us any green credits? Does this do anything as far as showing that we are really trying to be good stewards of the environment here?
That is an excellent question. I am not sure on that. I don't know if Jen has any thoughts on that.
Yeah, because batteries consume energy and just kind of cycle it, they themselves do not get any credits like solar projects.
All right. Nope. Very good.
All right. So. Thank you.
No further questions, then we will open the public hearing on this item. This is the time and place set for a duly noticed public hearing of the Eastern Municipal Water District regarding the proposed resolution making certain findings for the battery energy storage project under Government Code Section 4217.12. I declare the public hearing open and would ask for a staff report.
Thank you, President Pauley. California Government Code Section 4217.12 allows public agencies to enter into energy service agreements for the installation of battery energy storage systems on district property with the greatest flexibility in structuring agreements whereby economic benefits may be maximized. It also allows the district to select the proposal that is deemed to be in the best interest of the district and the best value. Prior to approving the battery energy storage system supply and installation agreement, performance data provider agreement, and related services agreements, the district's board of directors must fulfill two requirements under California Government Code Section 4217.12, and the board would make the following findings. A, that the anticipated cost to the district for electrical energy provided by the project under the proposed agreements will be less than the anticipated marginal cost of electrical energy that would have been consumed by the district in the absence of the project under these agreements, and hold a public hearing to consider approval of the agreements, for which a public notice must be given at least 2 weeks prior to the public hearing. The notice of the public hearing was posted on November 29, 2021. Based on a 15-year cash flow savings projection for each project prepared by Terra Verde Energy, there is sufficient basis for the above findings.
Thank you. I'd like to ask the board secretary how the public hearing was noticed.
Notice of the public hearing was published on November 29, 2021 in the Press Enterprise, a newspaper circulated within the district's boundary in accordance with Government Code 4217.12.
If the Secretary of the Board has received any written protest of proposal, I'd like to ask her to provide copies to the Board at this time.
No written protests to the proposal have been received.
Thank you. Since members of the public have been invited to participate in this hearing by phone, I would ask that any members of the public who would like to comment on this item, please do so now. Please state your name for the record. And do we have anyone wishing to speak on this item?
Not that I'm aware of.
Very good. At this time, we are ready to adopt the following resolution, a resolution making findings authorizing and approving entering into an energy services contract. I will look for a motion and a second on the resolution.
I would like to make that motion and make a comment as well. I just would like to, I know energy is one of the real big expenses in operating a water district, and our energy management program has to be an ongoing effort. And so I just want to congratulate you on this, because I think this is really innovative in our industry to use battery storage, and the savings are very significant. So just congratulations to the whole team.
Thank you, Director.
I would like to make that motion.
Very good.
I'll second it.
Motion by Director Armstrong, seconded by Director Slauson. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauley?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
And that passes 4-0 with Director Corona absent. The resolution that we've just adopted finds that the anticipated cost to the district for electrical energy provided by the project will be less than the anticipated cost to the district either consumed or purchased energy. In the absence of the project, authorizes the project and authorizes the district to enter into the purchase agreement and related agreements. With that, I understand we then have to take a vote on item A, correct?
That's correct.
All right. Which is, just to restate, is it the public hearing?
Authorizing the agreements.
Okay, authorizing the project for the installation of battery energy storage systems and service agreement in the amount of $4.5 million, which total includes contracts with Tesla Incorporated in the amount of $3.84 million. And I will again, would you like to make the motion by Director Armstrong?
I'll second.
Seconded by Director Slauson. And a roll call vote, please.
Director Pauley?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
And that passes 4-0 with Director Corona absent. Thank you very much on that. We are going to skip around a little on the agenda this morning, because I know we have people in the audience that have requested to make a public comment on a certain item, and I don't want to keep them for the entire day. So we're going to go to action item, our agenda item 5, which is our action calendar, and we are going to take up item A at this time, which is to adopt a proposed resolution amending the administrative code as it relates to updating the consolidated schedule of rates, fees, and charges to reflect adjustments to financial participation charges and water supply development fees. Mr. Adams, good morning.
Good morning, President Pauley, members of the board. This morning I'm presenting the final results of the FPC study, or financial participation charge study. As you recall, last month Mark Panny from Corolo Engineering presented the board the preliminary results of the study. Mark is here this morning, should you have any final questions on the study or its result. My presentation today is just going to cover the highlights, give you an update on the outreach with the BIA, and recommend adjusting the FPC fees based on the study. Also, just to note, I do see Mr. Lou Monville, who's the executive officer of the BIA, here as well. So let me just go quickly through this. Here's the outline for the presentation. Just going to provide a quick background, talk about the results and the process of the study, and then show a comparison of the current study and the assumptions as compared to the 2011 study. I do have a few slides to highlight some of the equity and fairness items that we sort of built in to further ensure that the FPC is fair for those developers that are paying the fee. Then show you the final results, which have not changed since the board presentation last month, and then talk about sort of the next steps and implementation. So with that, just quickly, as you know, FPC is also known as connection fees, also as capital facility charges, is a one-time fee that is charged for new connections and ensures development is paying its fair share for the system. A successful FPC allocates an equitable portion of the current and future costs to future customers. The district last studied FPCs back in 2011, and so it's been 10 years since that study. It was implemented over multiple years because the recommended increase back in 2011 was 66%. One of the things that has benefited the district since that initial study, or the 2011 study, is that we have modified the fee based on ENR since 2013. So that has kept the fee up to date as far as what we charge and to make sure that it's significant as far as paying for future costs. So just quickly on the background on the study, we did issue an RFP back in 2020, September. It was actually the first project I worked on when I started in the last week of September. That, you know, we've been working on it for the past year. Really the purpose of the study was to evaluate and update our fees. Three firms made proposals. We ended up selecting Corello for a cost of about $75,000. At the time, shortly after we started the process, we did have communication with the BIA and the executive officer to let them know that we were performing the study and that we would keep them informed as we proceeded through the process. The project did initiate in 2020, with really a collaboration of district staff, including myself, John Ward, Corey Wallace, Sean Stone, and Laura Barraza. And just want to thank them for all their hard work. They certainly did as much, if not more, than I did on this project. And then just to mention, Corello did establish a model best on best practices and adhering to standards that are used in these type of studies. So just quickly, you know, we really built off of the 2011 study. Doing a side-by-side comparison, there were some tweaks really to try to improve the equity and fairness and just how things have changed over the last 10 years. One of the large changes was just the way we valued the system. Prior study actually had a full carrying cost, which actually had a higher value on the system, and we decided to go with RCN across the board for all assets. The 2011 study also had a component-based hybrid, so it was broken off into components and then a hybrid, which was built buy-in and incremental. We actually did a system-wide hybrid approach. And then the other major change is just how we looked at supply allocation for water. Contributed assets excluded from system valuation. The time horizon, we used the 10-year time horizon, which was very similar to 2011, but we, because of master plans and our significant capital planning that we do here, we did take a look at 10, 20, 30, and even cost out to build out, ultimately stepping on the 10-year or landing on the 10-year analysis. So I briefly mentioned equity and fairness. Really the goal is to ensure that the fee is fair and reasonable for those new connections. There were really two major tweaks that we had done in this presentation. One was on water supply development fee. Water supply development fee is currently charged on every EDU or connection, even on water, for all connections. This year, we're recommending a change where that fee would only be applied for those that are outside of the RRA, which is the required reuse, which provides some equity because those that are in the RRA are required to sort of donate, you know, build recycled water systems and donate purple pipe. So they're, in theory, building that where people outside are not required to. So the recommendation is to have the water supply development fee, which was established in the early 2000s to help support recycled water system, only for those that are outside the RRA. Next one, storage credit. So in rare occasions, we do have developers who are doing major developments and donate storage. And so up until the study, there was no calculation to provide a credit on the FPC. So part of the study was to provide that calculation and to provide that credit for developers who do, in those rare occasions, donate storage. The proposed credit based on the cost is $1,138. So quickly, study results, which have not changed since since last month's presentation. The current total fee for both sewer and wastewater is $14,569. The proposed fee total is $16,134. This is a total change of 10.7%. Do want to call that if we did nothing as far as the study, the increase based on ENR would be 8.4%. So really with the significant investment that we have done over the last 10 years, the net increase is that 2.3%. And so, you know, the fact that we've done ENR increases over the years, we're really seeing a very, very minor adjustment to the overall FPC. And then when you add in certain connections would not be paying the water supply development fee of $300. In some cases, it's almost a break even. So I talked earlier about communication, and we did outreach. We did some outreach with the BIA here. Myself and Mark Panny of Corollo and executive management, including Joe Mawad and Laura Nomura, met with the executive officer of the BIA early in November. After that meeting, we did schedule a meeting with the BIA membership, which took place in December 8th. We also, as you know, presented the findings, the preliminary findings of the study to the admin committee on November 4th and then to the board last month on November 17th. The meeting with the BIA, there were no questions raised by the members that were attended the meeting. We did receive a few questions for follow-up. Development services provided prompt responses, so that was very successful from that perspective. And implementation next steps. So pending board approval, these rates would take effect January 1st. I do want to note the 60-day time extension. Normally we do a 30-day time extension for those that have unpaid application of service fees. Gives them 60 days to pay the FPC based on the old rate, so the prior year's rate. Development services will do the outreach and make sure that people are aware that they can pay the fee after January 1st, but before March 1st, based on the old FPC. I know there was a question at the last board meeting about how often we should be doing this, and certainly staff agrees that the study should be updated on a more regular basis and not wait 10 years. Finance is recommending that we'll include that in our financial policies to ensure that the FPC study is done every 5 years. Also, we will continue to apply the ENR on an annual basis to ensure that when those studies are done, the increases are very minor. So with that, in front of the board today is adopt a resolution to amend the administrative code and the provisions related to the consolidated schedule of rates, fees, and charges to reflect the new FPC charge and the water supply development fee. And then, of course, authorize staff to continue to bring to you in December the ENR adjustment for the fees that go into effect January 1st. And with that, I'm available for any questions. I know Mark is available. So.
I did have one question.
Sure.
On the reimbursement or a credit for contribution of storage capacity, we've done that in the past, but it's been, is that true, but it's been more informal? This quantifies the dollar amount? Because in the past, I understood when a developer had to construct a tank, maybe they had to, that we'd participate at some level.
So Dr. Salton, you're correct in that we have had, on occasion, oversizing of storage facilities by the district due to our regional needs, where we would fund that oversizing. But for the past many years, if a tank was not identified in a master plan and not included in our calculation of the FPC, our practice has been, our policy has been, that it would be a donated facility because it was not part of the calculation of the FPC. Having said that, our current policies currently are that in addition to donating the tank, they would still pay the entire connection fee. Over the years, we received a number of inquiries from developers asking if we would consider a reimbursement for the donated storage, and that's the result of this effort. As we looked at it, and we feel that this recommendation in terms of change of policy is more equitable and fair because a developer would donate storage.
Okay. I don't have any other questions.
Director Record, any questions?
No questions. Thank you.
Very good. I understand we have one public speaker on that, which is Mr. Monville from the Building Industry Association.
Thank you, President Pauly, honorable directors. Thank you for the opportunity to be with you. I first want to thank this board and its leadership in the collaboration of your staff from Joe and Laura and John and the whole team. They've been accessible both to me and our membership throughout the process. We understand, fee increases are never an easy undertaking. You have an obligation to cover the cost of your facilities and provide safe and affordable water and wastewater service. Our members equally are trying to keep housing affordable in an ever-challenging market. And I think this level of collaboration proves successful and has proved successful. And so I want to thank you for that. In particular, I want to thank staff for their acknowledgement of finding places where developers are building facilities, as Director Slauson noted, and giving credit where credit is due. And so I want to thank you all again for your collaboration. I want to thank staff for their ongoing support. I appreciate their outreach, and we look forward to working with you through implementation and payment of these fees and building great facilities for you. So happy to take any questions from any of you, but otherwise I want to say thank you.
Don't believe it. Director Eckert, any questions for Mr. Monville?
No, just a comment. I appreciate the relationship. I think we all serve the public better when we work together and try to figure out the best way to go forward in a matter of fairness. And I just want to reiterate that I really appreciate the good working relationship with the BIA.
I will second your comments on that, and I really appreciate staff and the collaboration that we have. We are one of the fastest growing areas in California, so we all need to work together with the various industry partners that we have. With that, is there a motion?
I would move to
motion by Director Slauson, seconded by Director Armstrong. Could I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauley?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
That passes 4-0 with Director Corona absent. Beyond that, we will now return to item 2B, which is a public hearing for the new boundaries of directors. This is the time and place set for a duly noticed public hearing of the Eastern Municipal Water District present potential revisions to the directors' division boundaries of the Eastern Municipal Water District as required under the Municipal Water District Code of 1911. Staff presentation will include three possible scenarios, and today will be an opportunity for the public to provide input on these scenarios and for the board to discuss and possibly provide some additional direction to staff. No formal action will be taken by the board today. The adoption of the revised district map will occur subject to a noticed public hearing prior to the state-mandated deadline of April 17, 2022. I declare this public hearing open and would like to ask for a staff report overviewing the potential updates to division boundaries.
All right. Good morning, President Pauley, members of the board.
Gordon.
So, yeah, we have today a presentation on the potential updates to the division boundaries. So rolling right into the background, our director division boundaries are set based on the Municipal Water District Law of 1911. This references Division 21 of the Elections Code, which specifies that boundaries need to be adjusted after each federal census such that the divisions are as equal in population as practicable. And the code also gives some factors that we can consider in adjusting the division boundaries beyond population, including topography and geography, cohesiveness, contiguity of territory, and the community of interests within the divisions. And so due to the pandemic, the Census Bureau released the data a little late this cycle. We got the first data set in a legacy format in August. This was followed by the same release in a digital format in September. The board has previously expressed interest in taking a look at some additional demographic data, but the data that's available at this time is not at as granular of a level as the redistricting data set that was released, which just included population, race and ethnicity, and housing data. So we're not recommending to look beyond those data sets at this time. And as was mentioned by President Pauley, the deadline for the boundary adjustments is in April of next year. And so once the data was released, we were able to intake this data and take a look at how our current division boundaries are looking at this time. And so we actually, the the boundaries that we had set during the previous census were actually pretty good, and the divisions still remain relatively equal in population. We have a spread of about 2%, and so we were able to accommodate divisions 1 and 4, which were our fastest growing divisions, growing at about 24% and 20% respectively. But even with that growth, we were, again, within 2% between all the divisions, and so we're looking pretty good there. I have some summary tables here just showing some of that, the demographic data that was available in the redistricting data set release. So there's the information there for your review. And so what we wanted to bring before the board today was just three potential configurations that we could make in terms of updates. So the common goal that we had across all three of the configurations is we wanted to make sure that we made room in divisions 1 and 4 for additional growth over the next 10 years. That's the overarching goal that we had, because we expect that those divisions will continue to be our fastest growing regions in our district. And one more item before I go into this first configuration, we will have a slide at the end that compares all three scenarios. So this first configuration is a minimum changes scenario. So we wanted to just rebalance the population totals within the existing boundaries with as few changes as possible. And so we kind of used division one to absorb the changes in the other divisions. So all the changes there are due to modifications in the other divisions. In division two, we made some slight adjustments near Clinton Keith Road just to keep the population's balance, as I mentioned. Division three, we had an update to reflect the city of Hemet boundary, which was updated since the last census. Division four, again, just some minor updates in the city of Paris to balance the population. Division five, we moved a portion of the boundary south near Cactus Boulevard, again, with the goal of balancing population. So once these changes have been made, again, we reran the numbers in terms of population and the other demographic data that was available, and there were no significant changes in terms of the proportions between this configuration and the existing director divisions. We have a second scenario where we tried to emphasize one element of the elections code, where it described the cohesiveness, contiguity, integrity, and compactness of territory. And so under this configuration, we tried to kind of smooth out some of the boundaries between the divisions so that it was just easier to define. Again, division one, the changes were due to modifications in the other divisions. We had a similar change in division two to the prior scenario, where we're just moving the boundary near Clinton Keith Road. Again, this will allow for future growth in division one. Division three, we again made the change near the to accommodate the updated boundary of the city of Hemet. And we added areas to the north and the south of Division 3. These were areas with a relatively low population, but this does allow us to incorporate some of the spheres of influence. And Division 4, again, a similar change to Division 1 near the city of Paris with the goal of accommodating future growth. And Division 5, we moved the southwest boundary near Iris Avenue, and this creates a more uniform boundary between Division 5 and Division 1. Once again, when we look at the population and demographic data, there's not a significant change in terms of the overall proportions relative to our existing division boundaries. And then the final configuration that we're bringing for your consideration is a scenario where we accounted for as much as possible the communities of interest within our service area, and we chose to kind of represent this by looking at the spheres of influence. And so, again, very similar changes in Division 4 and Division 2, just near the city of Paris and the Murrieta Hot Springs, Clinton Keith Road area. The biggest changes here are in Division 5 and Division 3. So in Division 3, Similar to before, we're adding the new City of Hemet boundary. We're adding areas to the north and south based on spheres of influence. And then there's the region here along Division 3 and Division 1 where the boundary got pushed out to be a more even boundary. And then in Division 5, it expanded a little to the southeast. And this is to encompass, again, the Moreno Valley sphere of influence. Once again, we ran the demographic tables, and again, none of these configurations are resulting in significant changes to the demographic totals that were available to us. The proportions are all staying kind of relatively the same, and again, we had the goal of trying to keep the populations in Divisions 1 and 4 on the lower side to accommodate for future growth. And so this slide is just a comparison of the three different configurations that we are bringing before the board for their consideration today. Again, the scenario one has the fewest changes. Scenario three kind of has the most. Scenario two somewhere in between. And based on your direction, you know, if there's changes that the board would recommend that they like in one scenario versus another, these changes can be mixed and matched to create a composite configuration. And so with that, just want to go over kind of the schedule. So today we're here at having a public hearing to review the different potential configurations to get your direction on how we want to move forward. Once we have that, we're anticipating over the next couple months to finalize the boundaries, and we do need to prepare a set of legal descriptions. We anticipate noticing another public hearing next year in January. And then we'll hold a public hearing in February to adopt the resolution with the updated boundaries pursuant to the elections code, and we'll get that submitted to the county. And so that concludes my presentation today, and I'm ready to answer questions or take comments at this time.
Any questions? Director Rackard, any questions?
No questions. Thank you.
Good. I just wanted to say good job on what we've done so far. I doubt you took a water district redistricting class in engineering school, but you're doing a fine job of it. So
thank you, sir.
Go ahead. Just one comment. The I'd probably favor the one with the least amount of change, just for consistency. But I'm not, committed to anything because. I thought about it. Having one city in a district or two cities in one district sounds like it makes sense, but South Moreno Valley residents and North Paris residents, I don't know how their interests are much different than each other's. So, but I think this is good for this hearing and something for everyone to consider.
And President Paul, if I can perhaps, I appreciate the feedback, Dr. Slauson, and the option one or alternative one, the minimum changes, is primarily to recognize that Division 1 and 4 are the highest scoring divisions within the district. As Gordon mentioned, last time we did this, we purposely made adjustments such that those two divisions were slightly lower in population than the other three divisions, which has helped us because currently, with all the growth we've seen, and we have seen record growth in our service area at more than 15%, as Gordon mentioned, still all the divisions are within 2% of each other, which is truly remarkable. And I think that speaks to the wisdom of the previous board action back in 2011. So based on that success that we've seen in terms of how the process has worked so far, we're recommending a similar approach where, again, we would have slight rebalancing, knowing that those two divisions are going to continue to grow at a higher rate over the next decade. We would definitely appreciate this board's feedback and guidance so we can move this process forward. We do want to see if there's thoughts or preferences on any of these three. As Gordon mentioned, the next step is to carry forward with the process, and we're hoping to be back in front of the board with a second public hearing ahead of the April deadline. In fact, we're looking, as Gordon mentioned, at February. So we would definitely value your feedback and your input today so we can advance this process.
Go ahead, Director Armstrong.
Well, I would say that I would concur with what you're describing. It looks like the approach that was taken last time really resulted in some good numbers looking at it now. So I think continuing forward with that approach makes a lot of sense. Between the three options that you have out there, they all seem relatively minor in comparison, with the exception, I guess, of the third one. That's sort of the communities of interest approach. And if that's not really an important consideration, I think you'd go with the least modifications. Maybe option one seems to be the least. So, but I'm good with all of them.
We appreciate the feedback, Dr. Armstrong.
Let me ask for our next public hearing, if I could task legal counsel. I would like to make sure that we're following the Voting Rights Act and all the implications go with that. I've learned a little about that process recently. I think, Gordon, you indicated we had about an overall population of 49% Hispanic population in the district. Was mm-hmm. that
yes.
what I saw? And I think we have a couple of scenarios where we have at least a couple majority Hispanic seats, correct?
Yes, four of the five divisions.
Okay, but Steve, if your office could just make sure that for the next hearing that we are making sure that we're following all the laws on redistricting, I think that would be good.
Will do.
So let's get back. If there's no more questions, I would like to ask the Secretary of the Board how this hearing was noticed.
Notice of the public hearing was published on December 9th, 2021 in the Press Enterprise, a newspaper circulated within the district service area.
And I will also note that April's team did a very nice job of noticing this hearing on social media, which I hope will do for the other two hearings. If the board secretary has received any written comments on the potential boundary revisions, I'd like to ask her to provide copies to us at this time.
No written comments on the potential boundary revisions have been received.
Thank you. Since members of the public have been invited to participate in this hearing by phone, I'd like to ask if any members of the public who would like to comment on this item, please do so now. Do we have any members on the phone?
Not that I'm aware of.
Very good. With that, I will declare our first public hearing on redistricting of the board seats closed, and we'll look forward to the next one.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Gordon. Great job. We will now go on to item three, which is our executive reports, and Mr. Mawad.
Thank you, President Pauley, members of the board. My report is included in your packet. In the interest of time, I'm going to give you quick highlights of the items that I wanted to share with you today. There is a great deal of activity on the Metropolitan Water District front. As you're aware, not only was there a recent declaration of a regional drought emergency, but also recently on November 23rd, the Metropolitan Board, after a key court decision, they decided to adopt a methodology to recover demand management costs, and that methodology was 100% supply component. The court decision essentially reaffirmed that no transportation costs can be utilized in recovery of those demand management costs. I know in the past, over the last many months, we've been briefing our board on this process, and we have been obviously very much actively participating in the member agency discussions. We've held 13 workshops with Metropolitan CFO and other member agencies. So at this point, with adoption of this new methodology, the demand management efforts will be funded and local resource programs will be funded going forward. Also, Metropolitan recently took action to establish four new standing committees, including diversity, equity, and inclusion, imported water, conservation of local resources, One Water Committee, and the Underserved Communities Committee. With these additions of the new four standing committees, four new members will be added to Metropolitan's Executive Committee. And there will be a more detailed report provided by Jolene that you can review that will give you more in-depth information relative to the recent Metropolitan action. A couple of other key items under new and ongoing activities that I want to highlight. We recently had a very successful meeting with the LA District Commander for the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, Colonel Julie Bolton. Had an opportunity to share with her the different collaboration efforts that we've undertaken with the LA district over the last many years. Their support, as you know, the South Paris Desalinization Program has been key for our ability to advance that program. And this year, we are asking for an additional appropriation of $8.1 million to continue funding construction of components of that program, specifically pipeline projects to allow us to convey additional brackish groundwater from our well fields. It was a very positive meeting, and the Colonel expressed her support for our efforts. And we should be hearing first quarter of next year if the LA districts and the U.S. Army Corps work plan does include appropriation for our project, and I'll be reporting to you accordingly. Also wanted to mention that we had our first quarterly meeting with the County Riverside executive team, and Juan Perez, the Chief Operating Officer, as well as the General Manager from the Riverside County Flood Control, Jason Yuli, were in attendance, as well as many other executive members of Riverside County. It was a really good discussion. We talked about all the various issues of interest for both the county and EMWD, including the arrearages issue, as well as the recent discussions we've had with the Kaweah tribe. But also what we discussed is American Rescue Plan funding that the county has received. And per the county's request, we did submit a list of projects that potentially we can partner on with the county, utilizing the county's ARPA funding within Divisions 1, 3, and 5. And these projects were specifically tailored to address needs in disadvantaged communities. So as the county reviews our proposed list of projects, we will keep the board aware of any advancements of those efforts. Under items of interest to the board, President Pauly, Director Record, and Director Armstrong, and myself and staff did attend Aqua conference recently. There was just a number of activities and notable events at Aqua. I did want to mention that Director Armstrong did chair session on Section 115 Trust for unfunded pension liability, and our very own John Adams presented our efforts to look at how we can address our pension liability. He was joined by members of Rancho California Water District as well as Irvine Ranch Water District. I thought it was a very good session. In addition, President Pauly and myself had an opportunity to meet with the board presidents and general managers of Rancho California Water District and Western. We talked about opportunities to collaborate and support Western and Rancho's effort to reach an agreement to improve service to the Murrieta Division. And then I did want to note also that President Pauly did receive and accept EMWD's recognition award as a diamond sponsor of the Aqua Conference. Another item of interest to the board, pleased to share with you that I've been selected to serve on the Southern California Alliance of Publicly Owned Treatment Works. Looking forward to the opportunity to represent Eastern on the board, as well as to assist SCAP in its mission to advocate and help ensure that regulating agencies and regulations affecting publicly owned treatment works and collection systems are reasonable and are in the best interest of the public. My participation on the SCAP board will include biannual board meetings. Finally, I wanted to express my appreciation to the board for their support to holding the 2021 Employee Appreciation Event. Given the current pandemic conditions, we are having the event in a virtual format. But I know each of the board members took the time out of your schedule to provide messages to all the employees. So truly appreciate your effort, and we will be having that Employee Appreciation Event this afternoon after the board meeting. With that, I'll be happy to answer any questions the board may have.
Any questions, Director Slauson?
Just do we have an update on the snowpack as of this morning or from yesterday's?
It's a great question, Director Slauson. So I'm sure we're all tracking the news of the storm up north this week, and hopefully next week there will be a continuation. You know, what I've read is potentially up to 8 feet, but again, it depends on the areas up north. But it varies depending upon elevation as well. But it does look does look good, and we're hopeful that at least the storm events up north will avoid the health and safety delivery mode that we've been discussing with the board as far as Metropolitan negotiating with DWR on deliveries, given that there is 0% allocation on the state water project. So hopefully with the recent events, the state will come back in January and revisit that 0% allocation. As you know, that was a significant concern, especially for those who are exclusively dependent on state water project supply. So we're hopeful that the storm events up north will alleviate that condition.
So what is the normal snowpack in the High Sierras?
That's a great question. I'm going to have to check on that, Dark. So I believe it depends on the elevation. It varies. Ultimately, the state is going to have to look at how much water is going to make it to the reservoirs. And based on that, they establish their allocation. But I will look into this, the average snowpack historically relative to today, and I'll share with you that information.
Interesting.
Joe, yeah. I did see a graph yesterday. Devin Depardieu showed me that we are well ahead of historical averages right now. So it doesn't mean that will continue, but it's certainly good that we're off to a really good start.
That's great to hear, Dr. Record. Appreciate you sharing that with us.
Thanks, Randy.
Joe, typically the state starts really low with the allocation, right?
Yes.
And then as we move through the winter, they adjust it based off of what happens. And so,
yes.
I mean, there's still, based off of what Director Reckren just said, there's a likelihood that it could move from 0 into 5 or 10 or something.
Absolutely. That's what we're hopeful. Each 5% represents about 100,000 acre-feet of supply to met on the state water project. Normal conditions has been 30% allocation. Okay. So hopefully we'll get to that this year. We'll have to wait and see.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Joe. Great. Appreciate it. Laura, do you have anything for us this morning?
Yes, President Pauley. I would like to just give a brief update on the $28 million general obligation bond financing that the board approved last month. So last week we priced the bonds, and we had strong investor demand, over 250% subscribed, oversubscribed, and we yield a net present value savings of approximately $9.4 million with very low true interest cost of 1.72%. So that really went well. I think our AAA rating is really paying off. The savings will directly impact 102,000 individual parcels and communities throughout the district, lowering their tax bills beginning with the 22-23 year. And April will be helping us with the outreach of that news. I'm very proud of the work that the team accomplished and the success that we had. And I specifically want to thank Thomas Hayes. I mean, he did outstanding work. It was a very heavy lift. It was a lot more work than our normal revenue bonds because of the property tax side of it. So I'd just like to say thank you, Thomas. He worked tirelessly to get that done. We appreciate the board always for your support in these efforts. So thank you.
Thank you, and obviously thank you, Thomas. Great job on that. Nick, anything for this morning?
That's just one item just I'd like to quickly brief you on. As you're aware that we've been coordinating with the City of Paris to potentially look at exploring the potential of consolidating water and sewer services, and at the direction of the board, we wanted to put in place a few things. One was we wanted to get a formal request from the city to move forward and look into that. We have received that from the city manager as well as their council. Another request of you was that we get firm confirmation not only from the city but from Liberty Utilities that, in fact, their deal of Liberty acquiring the water system is, in fact, dead and closed, and working through our legal counsel, we have got that confirmation directly from Liberty as well as the city. They were in escrow up until a few weeks ago. They had essentially reached the point of knowing that the deal was dead, but they still had an open escrow, which has now been closed. The third item was that we should put in place an MOU that defines the roles, the scope of how we're going to, you know, go forward and analyze the feasibility of potential consolidation of those services. We, again, through our counsel as well as the city attorney, have developed that MOU. In fact, that the city jumped on the first opportunity to take that to their city council for approval, which they did last night. So city council has approved that MOU. Our timing and schedule is to bring that MOU before the board in January for approval. And so we'll be doing that. And at the same time, we'll be looking to identify potential representation from the board on an ad hoc advisory committee, which we said that we would like to have in place to kind of oversee and guide us through this process. So you can expect that in January. Any questions?
Thank you. Very good. Thank you for that update. Linnea?
Nothing this morning.
Very good. Matt?
I have a couple quick ones. 2 weeks ago on the 1st, we had a chemical supplier arrive at the Moreno Valley plant to make a delivery of sodium hypochlorite. This company makes very small deliveries for our chemical odor scrubbers and for a few of our well sites and booster stations. As soon as they parked in front of the control room to sign in, staff noticed that there was liquid leaking from a tote, rather large tote on the truck. So the staff did a great job of immediately responding to that, getting people out of harm's way. The plant manager, Ken Tagney, did an excellent job of handling it and immediately notifying the proper authorities. So county fire, sheriff, and hazmat showed up to help respond to the incident. They were very complimentary of Eastern's response and staff to the incident. Through the course of responding to it, we learned from the county that this company has had several safety incidents and citations outside of this incident here at Eastern, and given their performance, we chose to end our agreement and business dealings with them, and we've already got a new company in place to serve instead. So just wanted to make you aware of that. And then the second item is yesterday's storm. We measured 2 inches at the Temecula Valley plant, so quite a bit of rain. But despite that, we were well prepared. Staff did a great job of handling things. We had no incidents, and the only damage I'm aware of is one of our flags was blown away from the flagpole across the street at the Paris plant. So we handled things well yesterday. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. I'm sure with our bond savings, we can probably afford to get a flag for it. So with that, we're going to go off, change up the agenda a little again. Director Record is at the Colorado River Users Conference, and he's there representing Eastern and Met, doing a good job for us. I do know he has some other commitments in a few minutes, so I wanted to get to action item B, which we all have an interest in, and that is to approve and authorize the recycled water users agreement with the California Department of Fish and Wildlife for the San Jacinto Wildlife Area. So we will go ahead and take that at this time.
Very good. Good morning, President Pauley and members of the board. This morning, I'd like to provide you an update and ask for your consideration of updated terms and conditions for our long-term agreement that we've had in place since 1987 with the California Department of Fish and Wildlife to provide recycled water to the San Jacinto Wildlife Area. I'm going to jump right in. A little bit of background. The San Jacinto Wildlife Area is approximately 19,000 acres with 900 acres of restored wetlands. It is one of the first state wildlife areas to utilize recycled water to enhance its wetlands. And it resulted from an agreement for wildlife mitigation associated with the state water project. As I mentioned, the original agreement was established in 1987, and this really established commitments associated with providing recycled water to the San Jacinto Wildlife Area for a term of 25 years. And it was a combination of a joint agreement for financing of infrastructure, a pipeline to serve recycled water to the wildlife area, in exchange for a reduced rate for recycled water during the term of that agreement. And that rate in today's dollars is $67.44, again, based on that original investment established in the 1987 agreement. And although the agreement established a term of 25 years, the agreement also cited that providing water to the San Jacinto Wildlife Area is a long-term mutually beneficial program for both the state and EMWD. And there was an acknowledgement at that time that the goal and the intent was to continue this arrangement beyond the initial term of that original agreement.
Since that agreement expired, we have had annual extensions through amendments while CDFW worked on preparing their land management plan. That land management plan was completed in 2020. And so since that time, we have been working very closely with CDFW to establish updated terms and conditions that will allow us to continue to provide the same amount of water to the wildlife area into the future. That current amendment expires on December 31st of this year. This figure here shows the pipeline infrastructure that was jointly constructed as part of that original agreement. The segment shown in red is the segment that was constructed as part of that agreement. And the figure also shows beneficial uses from some of our ag customers along that pipeline, as well as other recreational uses and the CDFW meters at the far end of the pipeline. Since the term of that agreement, we've been providing recycled water to the area since the early 90s. The line in green shows the amount of water that was stipulated in the agreement, increasing to its maximum of 4,500 acre feet per year that was achieved in about the year 2000. And the blue bars show the amount of water historically that CDFW has taken and applied to the wildlife area. And over the past 10 years, that's averaged about 3,500 acre feet compared to the agreement capacity of 4,500 acre feet per year. That makes up about 16% of EMWD's overall recycled water usage. As we entered into negotiations with CDFW to update the terms and conditions, we really needed to incorporate updated regulations in terms of the quality of recycled water that was provided to the wildlife area, but also maintain many of the same stipulations of the original agreement, including the amount of water that was provided and as well as the capacity in the pipeline that was established. So as I mentioned, the quality of water, the original agreement defined secondary treated wastewater. Of course, today we provide tertiary treated recycled water to the area. So we wanted to make sure that the updated terms really incorporate all current California state regulations for providing and using recycled water. The updated terms maintain the 4,500 acre feet per year of annual allocation. And we also added a language in the agreement that should we have additional water available, that we would make that available to CDFW. As we were looking at CDFW's use of the water seasonally, we also established CDFW to take 25% of their annual take in the winter months. And that was consistent with their usage over the past 5 years, that we looked at their monthly use, and that, again, over the last 5 years, they take on average about 25% of their annual take in winter months. So we wanted to maintain that moving forward. We also, though, do include a provision in the agreement that accommodates unforeseen circumstances associated with their ability to take the 25% in winter months, an unseasonably rainy winter or something along those lines that we would agree upon was considered an unforeseen condition. We also maintain the maximum demand flow rate of 4,500 gallons per minute. And again, we also added language that allows us to make additional system capacity available should it be available. And we also establish some additional coordination meetings associated with how they operate the area. The other key element that we looked to update were the financial terms and conditions. We maintained a designated CDFW rate for their use, but it was established based on their seasonal use. I mentioned earlier the 25%. So the rate is based on 75% of their take in the summer months with 25% in the winter months. And so it's really a melded rate of our ag summer and winter rates, again, based on that use. And we did accommodate a 20% ramp-up period per year until the target rate is reached. And this was to accommodate CDFW's budgeting cycle and what they communicated with us that they needed in order to plan year after year to get ultimately to that target rate. The first and second increments of that 20% ramp up per year were approved by the board with our recycled water rate structure in June. And it will continue, and it compounds year over year until that target rate is achieved. And it does include CPI adjustments as well. The target rate at the end of the ramp-up period is $145.48, and that's in 2021 dollars. And again, that $145.48 will be annually adjusted per CPI over, again, until that is period is achieved. We also included language to incentivize CDFW to maintain the 25% take in the winter months, that if CDFW's take exceeds 80%, that they will be subject to the ag tertiary summer rate for any water taken over the 80%. Again, that's to further incentivize their continued use of 25% in the winter. And we do we did include a provision to adjust the rate should regulatory changes result in substantial additional costs to EMWD. Again, kind of that similar example of what happened in the last term of us having to go from secondary to tertiary. This is an example of the ramp-up period. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, but in essence, it estimates about 5 years to get to that target rate. And I can come back if there's any questions on this. Other terms and conditions, it is established for a 15-year term, and we also defined responsibilities for CDFW, again, consistent with California state requirements associated with the use of tertiary water. And so this morning, we are asking for your approval and authorization for a general manager to enter into the updated terms and conditions and associated contract forms with CDFW, subject to non-subsystem changes, for the continued delivery of recycled water to the San Jacinto Wildlife Area. And although we are very, very, very close to having the executed or the agreement finalized and ready for execution, we recognize that this is the end of the year, and the agreement the current amendment expires at the end of this year. So we are asking for an amendment for 60 days to give us the rest of the time to finalize and execute the agreement. We're pushing hard to have it by the end of the year, but we want to have a stopgap just in case, again, to make sure that we have continuity of service to the wildlife area. And with that, I will take any questions. Oh, I'm sorry. Chris Hayes, who is an environmental program manager, is also on the line, and I'd like to invite him to say a few words as well with CDFW.
Good morning, sir.
Hello, everybody. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Great. Thank you for the opportunity to address the board. My name is Chris Hayes, and I am a program manager with the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. And I would like to start by saying that since 1987, the Department of Fish and Wildlife and Eastern Municipal Water District, we have worked together on the delivery and use of recycled water on the San Jacinto Wildlife Area, both of us mutually benefiting from this partnership. And we appreciate the effort that went into updating these terms and conditions and the collaborative approach that our teams took to get here to maintain the same amount of recycled water delivered to the wildlife area as established in the original 1987 agreement. And the department looks forward to continuing work cooperatively with the Eastern Municipal Water District, and we appreciate the board's consideration of these updated terms and conditions. And that's all. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Director Sloss, you got a question?
Question and a couple comments. I think this district has always been supportive, since I was on the board, of the San Jacinto Wildlife Area, and tried to work closely with Fish and Wildlife to accommodate their needs. The current land use management plan, or land management plan, that's been approved, I guess it's being sued, challenged. What we're proposing here, this contract, satisfies what they are requesting.
Yes, it does.
Okay.
It defines the 4,500 acre feet per year, and that is what we have also included in our agreement.
And if there is an expansion, if they change that land management plan and need additional water, we can look at that or revise.
Yes, we can.
The contract.
Okay. Yeah.
And then the ramp up, based on some of the things we've talked about before, we've had this contract for over 40 years, and we've kept the price really low. So one could argue we're subsidizing if they had been properly reimbursed for their infrastructure costs for extending the lines. And it would seem to me that that 40-plus years and the five-year ramp up is going to cover, so they will be made whole.
That's yes, yes.
I understand. Okay. No, I think it's a good proposal, good contract, and I support it.
Director Record, do you have any comments or questions?
Yes, I do. Several comments. Thank you, President Pauly. I appreciate the relationship with CDFW, and I want to compliment staff that did a lot of work on this, and we've worked very hard to be fair to other users and the price that they pay, and also recognizing the value of this wildlife area. And I just think it's just a fantastic partnership. And the creation of that pipeline opened up a lot of other ag areas for recycled water use, which is a real benefit to groundwater management. And we had a lot of really good discussions in planning committee. Director Corona was very engaged in talking about ag interests and what they pay. And so I think the compromise that we came up with and the ramp up is very appropriate. And so, again, thank you to staff and thank you to CDFW for their work, and I'll move staff recommendation.
Director Armstrong, any questions or comments?
Just one question on the rate, the 145.48 after the 5 years. I know it's a blended rate, but does that get them on par with other customers?
It gets them on par with a melded rate. So what we did is we took, you know, the 75 and the 25. And so, yes, let me go back to the graphic, Director Armstrong. So here, kind of what these show, this is a melded rate here based on ag and the winter rate here. And so what you can see here is this escalated at a 3% CPI over time. And this is their ramp-up period. So, yes, it gets them on par with what if they had a true winter-summer rate. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I just want to clarify, Dr. Armstrong, well, once we get to that melded equivalent rate, for the balance of the term of the agreement, that rate for CDFW would continue to be adjusted by CPI. Having said that, what this slide shows is the summer ag and winter rate. I do want to mention that we're currently in the midst of a recycled water rate study. And so as part of that process, we will be revisiting all the recycled water rates, and this board will have discretion as far as how the rates look like going forward. But again, the agreement with CDFW, the proposed agreement, does lock in the rate structure that we're discussing and that's shown here on this graph.
I did want to add one thing, just for the record. I did review both the Sierra Club Moreno Valley Group and the Friends of the Northern San Jacinto Valley letters. And the only thing that wasn't addressed that I've heard so far is the whether or not this constitutes a project. And I can just say from my perspective, from everything I've learned, it's not a project under CEQA. So, So that's all I can say. I just wanted to make sure
we appreciate that, Dr. Slauson. And on that issue, perhaps I can turn to our legal counsel to clarify that interpretation.
Yeah, our interpretation is consistent with Director Slauson's statement.
Thank you.
Very good. I want to, for the record, do we have anybody wishing to do public comment on this item? Anyone on the phone line?
Yeah.
All right, would you like to state your name, please? Ma'am? Ma'am, would you like to make a public comment?
Can
I'll ask one more time. Do we have anybody on the line that would like to make a public comment on action item B on our agenda?
Can I ask legal counsel a question? I'm just
Let's see. I'm going to make sure that she's
okay.
But President Paul, if I make a suggestion, if for some reason a public participant is having audio difficulty, they can type in their comment potentially. Can they not, Shayla?
If they are logged in through Teams, okay. They can.
Thank you.
That's what I was going to ask.
Yes. Can you hear me, Director Pauly?
Okay, yes. Could you state your name for the record, please?
Yes. My name is Tom Pollock. I'm a retired wildlife biologist with the California Department of Fish and Wildlife.
Okay, welcome, Mr. Pollock. We'll give you 3 minutes, sir. Go ahead.
Yes. A retired wildlife biologist and a former manager with the San Jacinto Wildlife Area. The Friends of Northern San Jacinto Valley have for a long time advocated for an equitable renewal of the 1987 reclaimed water contract for the San Jacinto Wildlife Area. Instead, Eastern Municipal Water District proposes a new, quote-unquote, contemporary reclaimed water agreement contrary to and at odds with the 1987 agreement. In the new proposed agreement, Eastern Municipal Water District seeks to nullify, modify the Department of Fish and Wildlife 20-acre-foot per day capacity right in the reclaimed water pipeline. EMWD also seeks to modify the 1987 agreement fee schedule by imposing a 20% per year ramp-up fee on reclaimed water for the first 5 years of the new contract. Over time, this will have the effect of rendering the new reclaimed water fees unaffordable to the Department of Fish and Wildlife. The fee ramp-up represents a backdoor attempt by Eastern Municipal Water District to reduce, if not eliminate, the current Fish and Wildlife 4,500-acre-foot per year allocation of reclaimed water for wildlife habitat and conservation. The proposed agreement also seeks to nullify, modify the existing pipeline replacement provisions to ensure reclaimed water remains available to San Jacinto Wildlife Area in the long term to support resident migratory populations of wildlife, including numerous threatened, endangered, and special status species. These impacts to biological resources are significant and must be addressed in the appropriate CEQA document. Eastern Municipal Water District, the lead agency for this discretionary action, provides no CEQA documentation for this approval. Pursuant to CEQA Guideline 15065, mandatory findings of significance, this project has the potential to, one, substantially degrade the quality of the environment, two, substantially reduce the habitat of fish and wildlife species, three, cause a fish or wildlife population to drop below self-sustaining levels, and four, threaten to eliminate a plant or animal community, and finally, five, substantially reduce the number or restrict the range of endangered, rare, or threatened species. EMWD's disregard of its CEQA duties and obligations on this project is a failure to proceed as the law requires. It is important for the Board of Directors to recognize the wildlife of California, especially endangered plants and animals, are held in trust for the people of California, and the EMWD failure to proceed as the law requires is a violation of that public trust. We thank you for the opportunity to comment on this important wildlife conservation project.
Thank you, sir. I'll ask one more time if there's any other people that on the phone line, any persons that would like to speak on this item.
Yes.
Yes, he's in there.
Okay. Yes, ma'am.
Go ahead, George.
And you have 3 minutes. Go ahead.
Thank you.
This is Susan Nash. I will speak for 1 minute, and then George should get on the line. I'm the attorney for the Friends of the Northern San Jacinto Valley, and I co-signed the letter. And it's simply beyond belief that legal counsel would state that this is not a CEQA project. Even the 12-month extension that you've been doing for the past 9 years, you have done a notice of exemption on. This is clearly a CEQA project. You are required to file a CEQA document. And as explained, the only appropriate CEQA document for this project is an EIR. Eastern well knows all their CEQA requirements, and in the past has filed many appropriate documents with the State Clearinghouse. Right now, both the department and the Eastern Municipal Water District are acting as if CEQA does not even exist. I would urge you to have a final form of this contract, not one without even signature pages on it, and with all the changes that you plan on making, continued to a future date at a time where you have prepared a CEQA document and have a 30-day notice of that CEQA document so the people can comment on it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Nash. Is there an additional speaker, I understand?
Yeah, George Haig. I'm on the telephone.
Okay, go ahead, sir. You have your...
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
I do appreciate that we're maintaining the 4,500 acre feet. That took several years to achieve, but I do not appreciate the increase in the cost, because I've been in meetings with fish and wildlife officials who have said in the past they will not be able to meet these costs, which concerns me. I also appreciate that my letter was dropped in front of you probably during the meeting. So I'm going to read a few sections of it. The Sierra Club strongly believes, since there's no CEQA document, you cannot approve this contract. MWBD is the CEQA lead agency, and you need to prepare and circulate the appropriate CEQA document for 30 days at least before voting on this project. The proposed replacement agreement for the original 1987 reclaimed water agreement appears to be one by people from each agency looking at the bottom line and not the environmental impacts, direct, indirect, and cumulative to the San Jacinto Wildlife Area. This is especially true in light of climate change, or as the Sierra Club refers, climate disruption. Because of this, the San Jacinto Wildlife needs to plan and develop resilient habitat. The San Jacinto Wildlife Area recently approved management plan fails to provide the justification for any change from the 1987 water agreement. Since 1987, the San Jacinto Wildlife Area has expanded, and thanks to the availability of your water, it has blossomed and provided habitat to species of concern, as well as threatened and endangered species. This agreement doesn't analyze impacts on these plants and animals. The San Jacinto Wildlife Area used to have qualified wildlife biologists as its on-site managers, but no longer. So you cannot account, you cannot any longer plan on that person being able to see what is necessary in a timely manner. This fact has and will impact the San Jacinto Wildlife Area with decrease in water supplies. And that decrease will come about because the lack of money to buy them. The proposed agreement doesn't meet the mission of the Department of Fish and Wildlife, which is to manage California diverse fish and wildlife plant resources and the habitat on which they depend for the ecological values and the use and enjoyment of the public. It appears only meet the needs of those who are looking at dollars and cents. This is especially true where the proposed agreement allows Eastern Municipal Water District to increase or ramp up fees by 20% each of the first 5 years. The Sierra Club believes the Eastern Municipal Water Agreement will lead to degradation of the San Jacinto Wildlife Area and limit its true potential, especially as we try to deal with climate disruption. The Eastern Municipal Water District must have the necessary studies analysis within the appropriate CEQA document prior to voting the proposed water agreement. The San Jacinto Wildlife Area needs
and
to
And, sir, can I just say we're kind of approaching your 3 minutes here, so if you wanted to wrap up.
The wildlife area needs to expand. We need additional water, and in my opinion, the Fish and Wildlife Area will be pressed to afford what you have provided. You have a good day. I thank you very much.
Thank you for those comments, sir. Appreciate them. I understand we have one last call for comments on this item. Very good. With that, any other board members' comments? Director Armstrong?
I read the letters.
Just very quickly, I'm having a hard time hearing Director Slauson when he speaks.
All right. I did read the letters that were forwarded to us in advance of this meeting, and appreciate those letters very much. And one of the things that struck me was that, you know, I think at our last meeting, we took action to change the stage of our water shortage contingency plan that we're in to acknowledge sort of the impacts that we're all feeling from water supply into our state right now. And Eastern has done a lot to improve water resiliency for its customers, but at the same time, we ask all of our customers to do their part when needed. And I felt like this agreement guaranteeing or providing the continuation of 4,500 acre feet really is doing something great for this wildlife area. It's not asking for any reductions, even though other customers are asked to reduce water use. So I'm not sure I understand that part of the argument, but I felt like this is doing a good job of being a regional stakeholder and partner. I would second the motion.
Don't think we have a motion. Director Record, did you want to make the motion on this?
No more comment. Ready for the vote.
Would you like to make the motion? Okay, so we have a motion by Director Record, a second by Director Armstrong. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
That passes 4-0 with Director Corona absent. Thank you, Director Armstrong. Director Record, I know you need to get back to the Colorado River Users Conference. Appreciate your participation.
Yep.
We are going to take about a 5 to 7 minute break before continuing. All right, we will reconvene our meeting. And going back to our agenda, I believe, if I'm correct, we're at the consent calendar, item 4 on our agenda. And I know that a Director Record, I believe, has dropped off to attend to other duties. So it is myself, Director Slauson, and Director Armstrong. Is there any members that want to pull any items for separate consideration or questions from the consent calendar?
I would like to pull item F for separate consideration.
Very
and vote.
Good. All right. In that case, I will make a motion for the consent calendar minus item F.
Second.
And Director Armstrong seconds that. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
And that passes 3-0 with Director Corona and Director Record absent. We will now take item F. Do you have questions or just a separate vote on
it? Just a separate vote. Thank you.
Very good. With that, I will make a motion to adopt item F.
I would second it.
Director Slauson will second it, and I'll take a roll call vote, please.
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
No.
And that is a vote of 2-1 with Director Corona and Director Record absent. And legal counsel, I'll ask for your opinion on that.
Sure. The motion fails. The Municipal Water District Act requires the district act by majority of the board, which requires 3 votes for a motion to pass.
Very good. With that, we will move on to back to our action calendar item. If I'm following the script, we're at item C, which is to adopt a proposed resolution establishing Section 115 Trust for pension and other post-employment benefits and approve pension trust funding for fiscal year 21-22. Laura, you are going to present this item.
Yes. President Pauley and members of the board, I'm really excited to bring forward this item. It's been a fun project to work on, and we appreciate the board's support of implementing a single employer Section 115 trust for the district. I'd like to thank the Retirement Trust Committee's work on getting us to this point. It's been pretty a quick process, and it's worked out really great. We have PFM Investment Advisors on the line today. Both Joe Federico and Ellen Clark are available to answer any questions if the board has any. So I'm going to go ahead and get started. So EMWD obviously provides a defined benefit pension to its retirees, and we also provide retiree health benefits to our retirees. And this funding status, liability and funding status were reviewed during our budget process. And the ad hoc committee was formed at that time to develop a pension strategy. And we brought information back to the board during the budget process, and the board did approve an additional $19 million per year towards our unfunded liability. The board did direct staff to develop a pension funding strategy with the ad hoc committee. The ad hoc committee did review the Section 115 trust options. We completed overviewing short and long-term strategies. We updated the policy principles, and we met with union leadership to discuss where we were headed. On October 20th, the board approved the ad hoc committee recommendations, which included approving the policy principles, establishing the Section 115 trust, approving PFM Asset Management as our trust administrators, approving initiating CalPERS Fresh Start program, and we established a retirement trust committee for oversight of our new Section 115 trust. So the first order of business per the bylaws was to appoint a chair and a vice chair, and Director Armstrong was appointed as our chair of the committee and President Pauley. We have several voting members, which include both the chair and vice chair. In addition, our general manager, Joe Mwad, myself, and John Adams, the CFO. We also do have staff support, Nick Kanetis, Thomas Hayes, and Laura Zamora help with that committee. On November 2nd, we did have our first Retirement Trust Committee meeting. It was very robust. We met with PF Asset Management to discuss our asset allocation study. They spent some time reviewing, the market, how we invest, investment goals and objectives. We attached to this item are several documents, the charter, the bylaws, our trust agreement between U.S. Bank and EMWD, and our investment policy statement. And I'll go ahead and go through briefly what those are. Retirement Trust Committee, we decided would be meeting on a quarterly basis, February, May, August, and November. I think you have those on your calendars already, so we're set to start in February. So attached to the item, we have several trust documents, the charter of the Retirement Trust Committee, which really outlines all the duties and responsibilities, how we monitor and report to the board. Also, our bylaws, as I mentioned, how we are structured, the governance, our meeting schedule, and accountability and conflict of interest regulations that we're required to adhere to. And lastly, the Section 115 Trust Agreement is attached. It's an agreement between U.S. Bank and EMWD appointing U.S. Bank as our trustee. It defines the trust and parties to the trust, all of the tax of fiduciary status, appointment and acceptance of the trust, powers of bank, limitations of duties, and fees and expenses. Now, we had an attorney from Andelson Atkinson, Cindy Strom. She reviewed the trust document, worked with U.S. Bank in making sure that we were all covered and that everyone was in agreement with the terms of the contract. But probably the heart of the whole Section 115 is our investment policy statement. And as I mentioned, the Retirement Trust Committee did work very closely with PF Investment Advisors, who provided us a great primer of investment classes and history of returns before developing this IPS. This IPS defines the purpose of our portfolio and also our OPEB portfolio. It outlines the investment objectives, the time horizon, our asset allocation mix, performance expectations, and guidelines for our investment guidelines for our assets. And it also establishes authority, reporting requirements, monitoring, and control procedures. And as a committee, our investment objective was to achieve the long-term growth of assets by maximizing long-term rate of return of investments and minimizing risk of loss to fulfill each portfolio's objective. And in order to do so, we've opted for a 70% equity and a 30% fixed income portfolio to try and achieve a 6 to 7% return. We have not set the OPEB target yet. We plan to do that in our meeting for February, a separate IPS for the OPEB. So the timeline and next steps, today we're here to have the board hopefully approve the trust documents. And then going forward, we will fund the first deposit to that Section 115 trust with $15 million. And in February, we'll meet again, the retirement trust, and that's the time that we will start working on the IPS for the OPEB plan. So with that, we'd like to request that the board adopt a resolution that approves the trust agreement with U.S. Bank as trustee. It authorizes the general manager to execute the trust agreement. It authorizes the chair of the Retirement Trust Committee to execute the bylaws, charter, and IPS. It authorizes $15 million initial contribution to the pension portfolio of the trust as authorized in our budget for fiscal year 21-22. And lastly, authorizes the transfer of OPEB assets from CalPERS to the OPEB portfolio of the Section 115 trust. With that, we're here to answer any questions. I want to also thank John Adams. One, he did a really heavy lift on helping us get to where we are today. Also, the presentation at Aqua, he did an amazing job. And also Thomas Hayes been a big help in putting all this documentation together. So with that, I'll turn it over to the board for any questions.
Director Armstrong, as the chair of the proposed pension trust, any questions?
Well, just more comments. I wanted to compliment the staff for the work that they've done so far. This is an awful lot to accomplish in this short period of time. And, you know, to do a fresh start, to set up the trust, to authorize and make deposits in there, to get a investment policy done, principal policy statement, et cetera, is a tremendous amount. And this is going to, I think, do wonders for the future for Eastern. And I think President Pauley threw all of this with his leadership as well. It's really something. And John did a tremendous job at Aqua with the presentation. And I think the other agencies that also presented, you saw that they're now fully funded with this after 10 to 5 years. And so it's definitely an achievable, worthwhile endeavor to do this. So I just want to say congratulations and compliment you for all your hard work.
Yeah, I'll chime in. I want to thank the staff. Great job. I know Mr. Adams there. I think it's the second one that you have put together in your career. All right, very good. And then just Director Armstrong, who joined our board a year ago, brought this as an idea, and here we are in a year accomplishing it. So thank you for your leadership on this, and really appreciate it. I think this is great for our employees. So would you, unless you had a question or comment?
No, I think it's we're being good stewards, and we're looking after the liability that we have for our employees. I think it's really good that we pursued this.
Would you like to make a motion?
Yeah, I'll make that motion.
Motion by Director Armstrong. I'm going to go ahead and second this, and we get a roll call vote, please.
Director Pauley?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
That passes 3-0 with Director Record and Director Corona absent. Thank you again. We will go on to item D, which is to receive and accept the annual comprehensive financial report, the single audit report on expenditure of federal funds, award, and assessment districts, number 5, 7, 8, and 12, financial statements of the Eastern Municipal Water District for the fiscal year ended June 30th, 2021, fresh off of his second 115 trust. Mr. Adams.
Thank you, President Pauley. Members of the board, so this morning's action item is to receive and accept the district's annual comprehensive financial report, or what we refer to as the ACFR, and various audit reports. We do have a brief verbal report from Rich Kikuchi, who is our engagement partner from Lancel Longhard. But before I turn it over to Rich, I wanted just to make a few opening comments. First, this was our first year being audited by Lancel Longhard. I believe the audit transition was seamless. Certainly staff closed the books within 60 days, and Lancel was able to issue the opinion letter in mid-October, so within the 120 days, well ahead of our initial schedule. I want to thank Wilma Garez, the district's controller, for her leadership on the audit. I don't think it would have went as smooth if she was not leading the effort. And really the whole finance team, not just on the year end and all their hard work to ensure a smooth audit, but the work that they do every day to make sure that we can have successful audits. So with that, I'm going to turn over to Rich, and staff will be available at the end for any questions.
Good morning, members of the board.
Morning.
My name is Rich Kikuchi, and I'm a partner with LSL CPAs, your auditors, and I'm here to present to you your June 30, 21 financial statements. One of my managers, Jocelyn Potter, who oversees this audit, met with the admin committee last week and went in detail regarding the audit, so I'm not going to do that. She went over each component of the audit, the annual comprehensive financial report, the single audit, the assessment district, the GAN limit, the letters, and also in your packet, I believe, is this PowerPoint for you. And as she stated, and I would agree, the audit went great, especially for the first year's audit. So as a result of the audit, or in doing the audit, we have to assess the internal controls. And as your financial auditors, I need to report the financial results to you. There was, in the internal control letter, one finding that we noted as a material weakness because of the dollar amount. I just wanted to briefly just address that. That was a requirement that we needed to report that to you because of the adjustment that the finance department needed to make to their taxes receivable. Much of it, though, is a reporting issue with the county, and so I'm very confident that now the amounts are correct and the district, along with other agencies in the area, are working with the county to correct this in the future. So feel very good about the financial statements. Again, the audit went very well, and I did want to thank Laura and John and Wilma and the whole team for making this a very successful audit. You know, the first year is always the toughest, but it went great. And so I wanted to have a shout-out to them, and I'm here to answer any questions, if you might have any.
Questions regarding the audit?
Well, I know that I'm not knowing the details of the adjustment, but I do know that the information you get from the county and the timing of that information can be a challenge at times. So It's not surprising that, you know, there's some confusion that goes around with that. But it's also nice to hear that that's the only finding. I always think when you go through an audit the first year, you really got to get to know the agency and you do a lot of extra work, I feel like, to do that. So these are really good results. So thank you.
Right. Thank you.
I would just say I was at the administrative committee and we heard the presentation in a little more detail. And, I think you guys have done a great job. You've done a great job. And I heard you're retiring.
Yes.
Yeah, so congratulations and good luck.
No, I appreciate that. You know, I was driving here this morning, and actually I started with the firm 32 years ago. And back then I didn't do government audits. But my first client was out in Hemet. And I remember I drove right by here, went to an auto dealership out in Hemet. And then this is actually my last client meeting. And so I was just so thankful that I'm meeting with you all because you guys are a great organization. I couldn't pick a better client to be at for my last meeting. So you're in good hands, though. The firm's got a lot of great people. The partner that's taking my place is the new managing partner. It's all good.
All right. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you. We're honored to have this as your last official
yeah.
act.
So. Yeah. thank you so much.
Thank you for being here and not on Zoom. I appreciate that very much.
You bet. Appreciate it.
All right, take care.
With that, is there a motion to accept the audit?
I move approval.
Second.
Moved by Director Slauson, seconded by Director Armstrong. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
That passes 3-0 with Director Record and Director Corona absent. We'll now move on to item E, which is to approve and authorize award a contract with Lead Electric Incorporated for $1.4 million under specification number 1368W Redlands and Cottonwood Electric Replacement, additional appropriation of $2 million. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Edward Cerna. I am a principal civil engineer in the engineering department.
Oh, well, welcome.
Thank you. I'm here to present, as you said, the Redlands and Cottonwood Booster Station Electrical Replacement Project. We'll be recommending an award of construction contract to Lead Electric. The Redlands and Cottonwood Booster Station is located in the city of Moreno Valley along Redlands Boulevard, just south of the 60. The inset, as you can see, is an aerial view of the station. The Redlands and Cottonwood booster was constructed in 1993. It currently uses three electric motor-driven pumps and one engine-driven pump. After nearly 30 years of operations, the existing electrical equipment is approaching the end of its useful life and needs to be replaced. As you can see in the picture, there is rust all along the front of the equipment. And also, if you look at the top of the lineup, you will see that the HVAC system is sitting on top with the condensate line running on top. And so there's a lot of things that we need to do to fix this station. So this proposed project will do three things. One, we'll replace the existing electrical equipment with updated electrical system. We will electrify the station by removing the gas engine and replacing it with an electric motor on the fourth pump. And we will also add a standby generator to the site. In October of this year, the district received four bids for the project. As you can see in the summary, Lead Electric Incorporated submitted the lowest of four bids with a bid of approximately $1.4 million. The engineer's estimate for the project is just under $1.1 million. The variance between the engineer's estimate and the lowest bid could be attributed to the construction labor shortage and supply chain delays. If this recommendation is approved, the contractor will begin in December and complete the project no later than June 2023. So Michael Baker is the engineer of record for the project. To provide continuing engineering support for the project, Michael Baker submitted a proposal for approximately $70,000. Michael Baker's scope includes responding to RFIs, reviewing submittals, and updating record drawings. So our recommendation today is execution of a construction contract with Lead Electric for approximately $1.4 million. Execution of a contract with Michael Baker for continued engineering support for approximately $70,000. Administrative award of other necessary contracts to complete the project and additional appropriation of $2,040,000, which brings the total estimated project cost to $2,289,500. And with that, I can answer any questions.
Any questions on this item?
I have no questions.
No? Nice job on the presentation. Appreciate it very much. Do I have a motion?
I'd move approval.
Director Slauson, second by Director Armstrong. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
And that passes 3-0 with Director Slauson, Director Record and Director Corona absent. We will move on to our informational items. Mr. Adams, it's been almost 5 minutes since we've seen you. Would you like to do item A, which is our financial operating capital highlights?
I feel
like you're going to put in for overtime today.
I should. I should. I was going to say this is the John Adams show, but with that, I'm going to make my comments brief.
This is what I'm presenting today is the first quarter financials for Eastern Municipal Water District. As you know, first quarter is really hard to do any significant analysis. So I'll talk about some of just the highlights as far as the high level things just to be aware of. So certainly our agenda topics very similar to every quarterly report that I present. I'm going to spend a little time on the consolidated and then just really briefly go through the operating services, the capital, and then just some final comments. So just first, and I'll just pop these up. Overall, revenues just a little above targets as far as our budget, operating expenses below. And I'll click these through. Really a non-operating revenue, which is the first box. A couple just high-level main items. Connection fees, we continue to see significant development and connection fees coming in. We're very conservative on our approach on projecting those, from a budgetary side. Right now, we're already over 60% over in the first quarter. And those numbers continue. As far as I saw the November numbers, we're still significant development occurring, and I would anticipate, unless something significantly changes, numbers very similar to last year. And the other thing to highlight, certainly debt service with lower interest rates, we're under budget there. The big one in non-operating expenses, the other one is our contribution to the pension trust, or OPEB. Last year, we made a $19 million contribution to OPEB. As you know, that got us to 100% funding, which is amazing. But we haven't made that contribution this year for the pension. With the approval of the trust, we will do that in January. And so you will see that $19 million spent in the third quarter. Overall, again, because of that $19 million, certainly net margin is a lot higher than we initially projected based on the budget. Go through this really quick. Operating water, above budget as far as sales, but very comparable to last year. We were, with COVID, certainly saw an increase in domestic water sales. We were anticipating somewhat of a decline as things try to get back to normal, but sales very similar to prior years, both on domestic and ag as far as an increase. With the higher sales, we did have some higher purchase water costs, just about $500,000 over our budget. So here you can see operating revenues for water service 9% above our projected budget. It is 6% higher than last year, mainly because of rate increases that went into effect, but also growth as we've talked about. Operating costs 4.5%. A lot of variation when you look at the various categories, but again, it's first quarter, so we do see that from a seasonal side. Overall, 5.2% above last year as far as the same period of time on expenses. So wastewater, very much tighter when you look at both revenues and expenses, which I will show. Revenues are just 1.8% above budget. Operating costs, 6% below budget. We have a few highlights or key variances, very minor when you look at electricity costs and treatment costs overall. So here you go, 1.8% on the wastewater revenue above budget, and then 6% under budget on operating cost. Again, higher than last year when you do year-over-year comparison, 6.2% in revenue and 7.7% in expenses. Recycled water, certainly 8% above prior year as far as sales. You see revenue is 15.5% above budget due to that increased volume sold. Again, it depends on the mixture. If we have higher amounts being sold for irrigation, we're receiving more revenue. So having 8% higher but 15% revenue really is that makeup. As far as key variances, again, electricity expense a little higher than prior year. Here you go, 15.5% on revenues, 5.9% under on operating costs. G&A, 1.9% or $1.9 million under, mainly labor, software and administrative expenses, very minor, but it's usually vacant positions that really drive that under budget. We are $1.7 million higher than last year, but that's just overall increases
everything from cost of living adjustments to other increases in personnel costs. Reserves, we did hit our high point at the end of last year, $629 million in overall reserves. A slight decline, and that's pretty typical in September with payments for debt service in that August and September timeframe. Sewer connections, this one going back, development continues. That red box is our budget at 3,050 for the year. What we're showing in the blue X's is prior year, so over 4,700 connections for sewer. For the first quarter, we're already 200 over prior year. Projecting out based on that same percentage growth, it would be over 5,000. Again, the connections continue, development continues. Now, with that said, this is restricted revenue. If growth is happening at a faster pace, we will, just have more demands on our capital on our expansion projects. So, again, that revenue is restricted and really just helps on our expansion. Just to show you where the growth is, continues to be in Menifee, Temecula, and the Hemet areas, but having growth all over the district, as you see there. So just quickly on the capital program, John Ward and his team will have a comprehensive update at mid-year, but this is just to show you to date a little over $20 million spent on the capital program in the first quarter, 19% spent. Of that, $4 million in outside funding, mostly grants. Operating fixed assets, again, 20% spent, very similar to prior year. A lot of variation within those categories.
Can I just stop you go back one slide? So just, again, I always like to point this out. The issue on the vehicles is just a long time frame, correct?
That is correct.
And we don't technically pay for those until they're delivered to us.
Exactly.
Correct? Okay.
And it does take staff a while to put together the specs, go out to bid and get everything else. So in the first quarter, there's a lot of work that happens in that first 3 to 6 months.
Point out because it just looks like we're
not,
not doing anything, and I point out that we are. So
yeah, okay. And also as far as we have a huge fleet, and so they do a lot of analysis on when is the proper replacement. So what's budgeted is sort of like our scheduled replacement, but then they go and look at maintenance records and mileage and everything else, and then adjust accordingly. So
thank you.
You're welcome. I'm sorry I didn't go into a little more detail there. Just overall, operating revenues higher than budget. Operating expenses lower than budget, very similar to prior years. And I mentioned the connection fees, 64%, 65% higher than our budget. But again, our budget's very conservative. And then, grant revenues, we've been very successful, $4 million so far in the first quarter to support our CIP program. And with that, I'm available for any questions.
I had none.
Very positive.
Very good.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I don't think we'll be seeing you the rest of the day, but thank you for a great job today, sir. With that, I think we will go on to item B, which is our 2021 annual legislative report. Danielle, good morning.
Good morning. I'm going to run the PowerPoint while Jolene kicks us off on the federal side of the presentation.
Right. Good morning, Jolene.
Good morning, President Pauly and members of the board. Today, we're honored to present to you EMWD's 2021 annual legislative report, and I understand we need to honor brevity, so I will move very quickly through the content, but before that, I would like to pause very briefly to thank the board and the general manager for your continued support of our legislative program. We couldn't have this robust program without that support, so thank you. I'd also like to support Danielle and Pakal for all they've put into the legislative program, as well as this complete report. Next slide, please. Next slide. One more slide. We're moving really quickly through this. The 117th Congress, by the numbers, you can see there were just under 11,000 bills introduced. 70 were enacted, and the report details the 136 bills that Eastern reviewed and took positions on. Next slide, please.
This year was definitely a year of transition in Washington, D.C. that started with some turmoil upon the change of administration. The president then worked swiftly to get his appointees in place, and Congress continued its work on the COVID pandemic response and recovery and passed the American Rescue Act. And then last month, Congress passed and the president enacted the bipartisan infrastructure law that sets in motion an exhaustive plan and funding to really ramp up infrastructure investments in the nation. Of course, Congress continues working on the Build Back Better Act, which was the social spending companion to the infrastructure bill. That has not crossed the finish line, but does continue to progress. This administration and Congress significantly increased its focus on environmental justice issues, renewable energy advancement, climate resiliency, underserved communities, and, of course, environmental protections with the immediate rollback of many Trump-era environmental policies. And on a high note, congressionally directed spending, otherwise known as earmark, was reinstituted. Next slide, please. Very quickly, here's a glimpse of the new administrative officials that EMWD will be working most closely with. Unfortunately, we do have a longstanding relationship with all of these individuals, and Camille Tutin, the new commissioner of the Bureau of Reclamation, was just officially sworn in today. So that's the team that we'll be working with. Next slide, please. As I mentioned, earmarks are back after a 10-year hiatus, and our process was very different compared to what it used to be. It was much more transparent, much more methodical, and with the help of our teams, we submitted applications for each of our congressional districts, and the public affairs team gathered support letters from the community. We were nimble, and we were able to secure one from Congressman Talbert for Quail Valley for septic to sewer conversion for $2.5 million and the Mead Valley booster for $1 million. Congressman Ruiz only supported one project on the side of the mountains, and that was a project for the Saboba tribe, and then Congressman Issa didn't ultimately submit any projects. Unfortunately, the appropriations process is stalled. But as soon as that gets moving again, we do anticipate funding for those projects to come through. Next slide, please. In terms of the Army Corps, the bipartisan infrastructure law, it did include $200 million for environmental infrastructure, which is the account that helps to fund our desalination program. And last month, we submitted a request for $8.1 million from the Army Corps to continue the investments in our desalination program. The Bureau of Reclamation, through this bill, received $8.3 billion, which is an historic level of funding for the Bureau of Reclamation. We are working very hard to position EMWD to receive these funds, and we actually have a meeting with the Bureau of Reclamation tomorrow to share with them all of our funding priorities. Next slide, please. Moving through this slide very quickly, ETA has launched a three-year roadmap to define additional controls on PFAS. Of course, the administration repealed the Trump-era waters of the U.S. rule, and there are a few funding categories that are important to EMWD, and we are tracking all of these items very closely. Next slide, please. In terms of expectations for 2022, there's still an intent to enact the Build Back Better, which is the reconciliation bill, but I do sense that if it gets pushed into 2022, the enthusiasm to pass this bill may wane quickly, but we shall see. As for the FY22 appropriations, we do have a continuing resolution until February. So in February, the Congress will either pass the appropriations bills or There is unfortunately already talk about passing another continuing resolution that would carry us through the elections. Following the elections, there might be a very interesting lame duck session, particularly if the House or Senate flip. And as you all are probably already seeing in the news, we are already seeing some fallout from redistricting, especially in California. You probably saw Devin Nunes announced his resignation last week. We expect to see many more retirements continuing into the first quarter of 2022. And nationwide, we're seeing a wave of Democrats announcing their intentions. So we'll be spending... In 2022, also we'll be spending a significant amount of time pursuing the funding that will become available. And then lastly, we've been making the very most out of our virtual meetings, but we're definitely eager to return to our in-person advocacy meetings in Washington, D.C. next year. And with that, I will pass it over to Danielle to provide the update on the state side. Thank you.
Thank you, Jolene. I, too, will be brief with my comments, recognizing the late time. But before I jump into my comments, I really did want to acknowledge the work of our legislative analyst, Pakal. He has done a great job of jumping in and doing a hefty percentage of the writing on this report. I also want to acknowledge the contributions of Joyce Messon, who did all the design and graphic work of this, as along with the rest of our public and government affairs department. So jumping into the state side, which starts on page 40 of your legislative report that you have before you. This was an interesting start of the 2021 legislative session. We did have a delayed start due to COVID infections in the Capitol. Shortly after the spring recess, Senate and Assembly leadership did jointly come together and acknowledge the impacts that the COVID was having on the legislative process. They did ask all members of the legislature to cull their bill packet down to only 12 bills. This applied to both bills that had applied to the already made it over to the second house of the legislature, as well as those that were still in the first house. Overall, 2,770 bills roughly were introduced. The governor signed 836, which was more than last year, but considerably less than prior years. Of the 836 bills that made it to his desk, 770 were signed, 66 were vetoed, with a veto percentage rate of just shy of 8%. The bills that Eastern reviewed, both on our own and in tandem with our associations, were approximately 471 bills, and we issued 339 letters of support, opposition, and other acknowledgments of efforts and thank yous. There were a number of external forces that had deep influences on this legislative session. Clearly, the second year of the global pandemic was a major influence, both logistically and content-wise. The governor's recall effort, since 1913, 55 governors have been, constituents have tried to unseat a sitting governor. Only two of those efforts have been successful in reaching the ballot, and of course only one has been successful in removing a sitting governor. So the governor did, after a while, start taking the recall effort seriously and did temper some of his tone and tenor, as well as the content in which he chose to weigh in on. The record state budget surplus was a big influence this last session and did serve as a big backdrop to a lot of the conversations that were ongoing throughout the entirety of the legislative session. And then clearly with the record wildfires and the statewide drought emergency, natural disaster played a big part of the backdrop going in through the session. Eastern, along with our colleagues in the water industry, did work aggressively to lobby for the nearly $1 billion in arrearage funding for water and wastewater arrearages. We are grateful to the Senate for championing that effort and the administration for further running the ball. I would note that SB 155, which was one of the bills that was one of the budget trailer bills that was last signed, was significant in that it extended the shutoff moratorium from the predetermined September 30th date to December 31st, 2021, which clearly has a big impact on the water industry. On the safe and affordable drinking water side, this is an area where we've weighed in extensively, both on the regulatory front as well as the legislative front. On the regulatory front, the State Board did adopt its second expenditure plan for the SB 200 funds this year. We did provide comment on the structure and input or contents of those reports, and I think the State Board has started listening to us in terms of the transparency and what we want to see included in those reports. In addition, they did issue their first needs assessment this back in April. That document was very significant in that it took into consideration all the failing and at-risk water systems, what they think could be applied to bring those systems into compliance, and they determined that there's an overall gap of roughly $4.6 billion. So transitioning over to the legislative side, clearly SB 222, which sought to establish a low-income assistance program for the state, that bill failed at the deadline because the administration wanted to see more effort and work put in to coordinate with other efforts that were ongoing and anticipated to go into this next year. Eastern, along with the various associations that we are party to, did weigh in extensively on 222, specifically because it didn't include a funding source that would serve as the backstop for the assistance program, and that was deeply concerning for the water industry. SB 223, which seeks to expand the provisions under SB 998, that one was held early in the session. That was the most concerning of the two Dodd bills that were introduced this year. We fully anticipate that being taken up again this next year. And then SB 403, Eastern did weigh in with the sponsors early on when they were crafting this bill. It ultimately did pass. We did have some concerns. We did provide some significant feedback to the sponsors and the author of SB 403, which seeks to facilitate and mandate consolidations of at-risk water systems. The needs assessment process has identified roughly 617 at-risk water systems and 77,000-plus wells. So it is a substantial effort, so I think it was worth our time there. I'm going to go ahead and move on. On the water quality side, I want to acknowledge the work that Metropolitan Water District and CMUA did on SB 230, the Port Tintino bill, that sought to develop a process to address constituents of emerging concerns. Both sponsors have acknowledged that it's an important piece of legislation that did require some additional thinking as far as funding on how to establish and fund the program, but they anticipate bringing this bill back next year. Clearly, one of the bills that was most concerning for us this session was AB 1434, which sought to change the recommendations for the indoor water use efficiency standards. The water community worked aggressively with Assemblymember Friedman. That bill was ultimately held in the Assembly Appropriations Committee, where we anticipate it to move quickly this next year, so we're working aggressively to safeguard our interests there as best we can. AB 818 was a CASA sponsored piece of legislation. This was the second year that they've sought to try to achieve labeling on pre-moistened, non-woven disposable wipes or flushable wipes. We were very happy to continue to support CASA in this effort, and it was ultimately passed by the legislature and signed into law. Climate change, a signature issue for the governor and the legislative leadership, so there was a swath of bills. Most of them sought to do some component of an implementation on the governor's 2030 initiative that he put forth in the executive order the prior year. Bacall has done a really great job of tracking those efforts and continues to keep us up to date and informed. On the bond funding side, Assemblymember Eduardo Garcia, he took the time to meet with Eastern extensively on the septic to sewer issue, so that was incorporated in his bond initiative. And then we did meet also with Senator Allen as he put forth his bond initiative, but clearly since the excessive funding in the state budget was apparent, that most of that transitioned over into prioritizing the funding that was in the budget. We were successful in continuing the septic to sewer advocacy work, and that was also included. Wildfires, the third consecutive year of historic wildfires. The legislature continued to take wildfire issues seriously. They formed a working group and developed a package or blueprint of legislation that they put forth, a majority of which was passed. It essentially sought to harden communities against wildfire, and then also alongside and complementing this package was a $1 billion that was also put in the state budget to assist with wildfire response. On the miscellaneous side, clearly the Brown Act was something that was very important to Eastern and on public agencies throughout the state. We did support AB 361 by Assemblymember Rivas. There was a second effort, AB 339, that was far more aggressive and detrimental in terms of the transparency requirements. Not that we don't encourage transparency, but more so the technology requirements and the translation requirements that it would have put forth were very onerous, and the governor ultimately vetoed them because of the extensive costs, even though it was called back to only address cities and counties with 250,000 or more residents. The governor did indicate that there's an appetite to continue to do more on the Brown Act side, so we'll continue to keep our eyes there, open there. And the Metropolitan Water District efforts, Eastern did support met in their efforts to address the Surface Mining Reclamation Act of 1975 by identifying that they could be a lead agency under SMARA. Eastern, again, we worked extensively with MET, and we supported both Assemblymember Mays and MET throughout the process. On the rate-setting side, SB 323 by our colleague and friend, Senator Caballero, was an AQUA-sponsored piece of legislation that sought to allow for water providers to set rates through the validation process and through the courts, seeking clarity and establishing a time frame for customers to bring forth complaints and concerns. So the thinking was to bring more clarity in the rate-setting process, and that bill was ultimately signed into law. We do anticipate a very big year coming up this next year, largely because of the significance of the issues that are coming forward, but also because a large number of bills were held last year, so we anticipate them rolling over to this year. Clearly, we've already heard that there's going to be a $31 billion budget surplus going into 2022. We're operating currently under statewide drought. We have the water use efficiency and conservation measures coming forward with recommendations on both the indoor and the outdoor being promulgated by DWR. The regionalization of water and wastewater systems continues to be a topic of conversation at the State Water Resources Control Board. Clearly, there's a lot of work left to do on the safer implementation side. We have the electric vehicle issue that we need to address with our fleets. And then illegal cannabis operations, Mojave Water District is putting forth three bills on this issue. Climate adaptation continues to be an issue of importance for the administration, even more so. I think they're even more charged up and ready to go. Assemblymember Grayson continues to have interest in fees, fines, and rate structures. He's already put out his marker report on addressing affordable housing with impact fees and connection fees, clearly in his crosshairs. Wildfire response will still be on the table despite the package that was passed. There's a lot of work left to do on the water quality side, and then, as I indicated earlier, the Brown Act and transparency measures continue to be an issue of importance. I wanted to take a quick pause and acknowledge that last year we did a comprehensive rewrite of our policy principles and our legislative priorities. So we'd like to put forth our legislative priorities for a second year, rolling over last year's issues. recognizing that we plan to have a workshop with the board in sometime in the spring, I believe. So I would just wanted to pause there and acknowledge that. And then the board did task us with continuing to look at non-functional turf and the ways that we can be influential in supporting the removal of non-functional turf and addressing water conservation in that manner. So we continue to work with AQUA and others to see where we can be progressive. That concludes my report.
All right. Excellent. A lot of stuff there. Did I see that one of our members of the assembly is going to be retiring?
Assemblymember Medina will not be seeking a final term.
Interesting. Any questions for Danielle or Jolene?
Just a great job. You guys do a fabulous job, and it's a great report, and this is a great report, too, and so just a great job.
Thank you.
They do. So thank you. Let me ask our general manager, because I have a hard 12 o'clock exit from here, and I know I don't want to disrupt our quorum. Do you think we could hold the Water Infrastructure Funding Act of 2022 over to 2022?
President Paul, yes, that is absolutely possible. It is not time sensitive, so at your discretion, we can bring it back in January.
Danielle, would you like to be in our first meeting of 2022?
It would be my honor.
I figured it would be, so.
Thank you.
Plus, I don't want to, John Adams is all the, he's winning the time wars for today, and I don't want to, you know, disrupt that. So we will see you first meeting of next year. With that, we have item 7, which is to receive and file various reports. I will make a motion to do so. Director Armstrong, would you like to second that? May I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Polly?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Passes 3-0 with Director Crona and Director Record absent. That brings us to Nicole. Good morning, Nicole.
Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. I have a very brief calendar review. There are no new items to report at this time with the holidays coming up. On page 2 of your calendar review, we have the board's calendar for the next 3 weeks, and these are mostly standard items. Do we have any questions or changes on these items? On page 3 of your calendar review, we have a couple of upcoming conferences in February of next year, and we have the upcoming board meetings, which are on schedule, the upcoming committee meetings, which are on schedule, except for the December 21st ONE meeting. You see that one will be on a Tuesday rather than the normal Thursday, and that's for Directors Armstrong and Slauson. And on page 4 of the calendar review, we have your joint interagency meetings, and those are on schedule as well. Are there any questions on the calendar? That concludes my report.
I had one. I just want to note that I had people reach out to me and make sure that Joe was the featured speaker at the Winchester MAC in January. So
looking forward to it.
People are already excited about Joe's appearance at the Winchester MAC. So
thank you, President Pauly.
All right, thank you. Thank you very much. That will take us to our board calendar review. And Director Armstrong, would you like to give us a brief summary of your activities, which I know have been a lot recently?
Yeah, they've all been really good. For the sake of time, I'll just mention the very last one, I think it is, Elsinore and Eastern interagency meeting that was yesterday. And I thought great meeting, and really a key item from that was the desire for a discussion to occur between some of the regional agencies here in Southwest Riverside County to talk about regional resiliency projects. And so I know we're going to be setting up some sort of meeting here at the beginning of 2022 to kind of brainstorm on that. So I thought that was a really good item there. That's it.
Very good. I had a number of meetings. I'll go through them quickly. IE Works board meeting, I had staff attend, which I understand that was our initial one. It went well. EMWD Western joint meeting is always, I feel our staff gives a lot of the presentation there and does a good job of it. Was not able to attend the annual coaster contest judging, unfortunately, which is one of my favorites, but did not fit in the calendar. Here, Hemet-Sanchina Water Master, the main item coming out of there was we passed our annual budget. There will be no increase in assessments for another year to the member agencies of that. Great update, as always, with the general manager. WRCOG strategic planning, I just wanted to touch on quickly because it was all the agencies figuring out where WRCOG is going in the future and hopefully not revisiting some of where they got themselves in a little trouble in the past. But myself and Director Dunstedt, as the two water agency members, suggested that we start doing things at RCOG for regional water planning, maybe some polling that they could do, maybe some being an integrator of planning for more storage, for possible local resources, and getting the cities and the county government involved in there. So we're really pushing for RCOG to have continue with the water portfolio. It does a fine job on it. Water's the water leaders' breakfasts and things, but I think it can play some additional roles in the water space of Southwest Riverside County. We had a good meeting, and I just want to compliment Joe on leading this meeting with a couple of our fellow agencies on the Murrieta service area down at Aqua, and I think that is heading in the right direction. Again, I had a couple other directors reach out and tell me how pleased they were with Joe and his demeanor and being able to lead that. Let's see. I had a nice meeting with Laura on some administrative topics. The regular WRCOG meeting, not overly eventful, was able to go to the CIS project completion breakfast. Thank you again, Laura, for inviting me to that. That was great, and as I acknowledged Charles this morning, it was really something to get that done this year. So I always call that the part that is our cash register here, and if our cash register isn't working, we've got problems. So I was happy to go over a great bunch of people over there, and they did a spectacular job. Director Slauson.
Yes, I attended the joint meeting with Western. We discussed issues of common interest, the Paris North Basin. I was highlighted. I attended only two of the days of Aqua on the December 1st and 2nd, and I noticed that Larry McKinney was honored and attended a couple of the legal seminars as well. At SAPA, we authorized the general manager to issue a request for proposal for turf removal and drought-tolerant landscaping services to support the Waste Energy Water Energy Community Action Network program weekend. And then finally, I attended the monthly meeting with Joe, and he just brought me up to speed on all the issues, so today was much easier getting through.
All right, very good. Any final director's comments or future agenda items? Being our last meeting of the year, I'll just start off and say again to the Eastern staff, a great year here. We accomplished a lot given some of the circumstances in our second year of coronavirus. But thank you to everybody, and I hope everybody has a good holiday season. Very good. With that, I understand we have a one closed session item. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. President. Pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9B, as described on item 10 of the agenda.
I think we can do closed session right in here. Is that understandable?
That's correct,
okay,
President Paul.
Very good. We don't need to switch over.
Nope.
Do you need to switch the tape over?
No, we don't have any.
Okay. Are we on? Go ahead, Steve.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The board met pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9 to discuss significant exposure to litigation. No formal action was taken by the board. That concludes my closed session report.
Very good. With that, we will stand adjourned until January 5th, 2022. Thank you, everyone.